C3 AI software allows you to develop AI applications with less code, less resources, and less maintenance. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Here's your money briefing for Friday, January 14th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Enrollment at U.S. colleges and universities has been trending lower for several years, and last fall, schools lost more than 3% of their undergraduate student base. That can make things difficult for a lot of schools that are already strapped for cash.
A lot of schools are tuition dependent. They don't have significant endowments, and so they have to rely on getting enough students in seats to pay their bills.
Doug Belkin covers higher education for the WSJ. Coming up, we'll talk with him about what's behind the enrollment decline and what it could mean for students' finances. That's after the break.
C3 AI Enterprise AI software supercharges your SAP installation, making it fully predictive. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Colleges and universities find themselves competing for a dwindling number of students. Since the start of the pandemic, undergraduate enrollment has declined by nearly 7%, according to the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center. That's changing the math for the way schools operate and the tuition they charge students. WSJ Higher Education reporter Doug Belkin has been studying the numbers, and he joins us with more. Doug, thanks so much for being here.
Happy to be here.
So, Doug, what's driving these numbers down so much?
COVID. Kids don't want to go to school in a place where they can't really go to school. There's been so much disruption on college campuses that a lot of students are making the decision that it's not worth the time or the money to head to college right now. So folks are putting it off or dropping out.
Well, what about remote learning? Is that playing a role?
You know, kids don't go to school just to go to class. That's they pay money to get access to accredited universities and credits and to earn a degree that way. But what brings a lot of students to school are the students, the quad, the clubs, the access to the social life, the swimming pools and the gyms and the professors in person. And so if that's denied to them because everything's remote or they're stuck in their dorm room and the classes aren't live, or they're, you know, constantly being told not to socialize, then the value of going to college is much diminished. So not everybody wants to do it.
So, Doug, where specifically is enrollment declining? What kinds of schools are getting hit the most?
The decline in enrollment is very uneven. There's plenty of schools that are doing very well. The selective schools are getting more applications than they've ever gotten before. Metro schools, schools in big cities generally tend to do well. Private, small, rural schools, especially those in the Midwest and the Northeast where there's a sharper demographic dip, are the most affected by this enrollment decline. Big Ten schools, Ivy League schools, they're not feeling the pinch at all. The folks who have seen the greatest decline of anybody is the community colleges. And I think part of that has to do with the very tight labor market. You can get, you know, a lot of folks use community college to pivot, to turn their career into a different direction. But the labor market's so tight, if you want to get a job, you can. So that's seen as a really sharp decline, especially among men. They've dropped out of school to go to work.
Well, let's talk about how the job market can affect enrollment. Are we seeing it have an impact on particular areas of study?
So this has also been a fairly long-term trend. The humanities have been shrinking on college campuses for at least a decade. You know, majors like English and history and liberal arts in general are not popular right now. Folks are drawn toward degrees that they perceive will get them a good job when they graduate. Computer science is very popular right now. Psychology actually happens to be up among the social sciences, but a lot of the technologies. So communications, journalism is way down, but communication technology is up. So learning how to manipulate the technology that everybody uses to communicate with each other, that education is, the demand for that's growing. There's just been a big gap between what colleges have prepared students to do and what the workforce is asking them to do. And so students are voting with their feet and trying to get more pragmatic degrees to get them better jobs. And that's been going on for many years now.
You tell me more about that. What kinds of enrollment trends were colleges and universities seeing before the pandemic?
There's been a decade-long decline in enrollment at U.S. colleges starting around 2012 after the last big recession. Things never quite recovered, and there's probably two drivers. The perceived value of a degree has flattened considerably, and cost has risen. So going to college has become a very risky endeavor. If you don't study the right major, if you don't get the right job, you may end up in debt that you can't get out of. And people are keenly aware of that. So that's a big issue. And the second big issue is there are just fewer 18-year-olds coming of age. After the baby boomers had their kids, there's been a demographic dip, which is going to continue for a while. And that's also part of what's happening here.
All right, let's talk about the financial implications of all this. How have colleges had to adjust to enrollment declines?
This is a really interesting question because, you know, a lot of schools are tuition dependent. They don't have significant endowments, and so they have to rely on getting enough students in seats to pay their bills. And if they can't do that, then they have to drop academic programs or staff. One of the things that makes this so painful and difficult for universities is that they have a shared governance system. And so in order to make a decision, they have to get buy-in not only from the Board of Trustees and the administration, but from the faculty. And the faculty don't necessarily want to drop programs because they're the faculty and they teach them and they think they're important and that's their job. So these changes tend to happen slowly. And when they do, they can be dramatic and painful on college campuses. And we're seeing that especially at these small schools around the country where these shifts are beginning to happen. There's another interesting effect to all this. And when schools lose students and they can't invest in their education, they oftentimes offer a subpar education with fewer services, fewer professors, fewer programs. And there's a nickname for these schools. They're called zombie colleges. And it's a derogatory name, and it means that the schools are sort of limping along, but they're not really able to offer a good, strong education and prepare their students for what's next. But they don't want to dissolve or close, so they just sort of march forward.
Is this an unusual position for schools to be in competition for a dwindling pool of students?
This is a historic shift. We've seen higher education grow since well before World War II. The GI Bill had just exploded, and we went from 3 or 4 million students to upwards of 20 million students, all the way up until the Great Recession. And essentially what happened is we overbuilt schools, and now the number of kids has shrunk, and there's increased competition from online education groups, which are not traditional. Google can offer a very strong credential that can get you a good job. LinkedIn offers services. There's a lot of different ways to get an education now that don't include an accredited four-year university. So the competition is coming from different directions, and it's undermining the foundation and the business model of the schools that have been around for 250 years.
And so how has this changed how schools attract students, and what does it mean financially for students?
So in some ways, this is good for students because the supply and demand curve is upside down from the school's perspective. They have to lower their costs. And so the amount of aid, of grants that they're willing to give students to lower their out-of-pocket costs has increased every year for the past several years. So they call it the net cost now. So you may see a sticker price for a private school of $58,000, but the average student may be paying $34,000. And that number may be dropping as the supply of students drops and the demand for what these schools are selling drops. Schools have for a long time relied on international students who pay full freight. They don't generally get a discount. And COVID really disrupted the number of students who could come from overseas or who are willing to come from overseas. And in some instances, that was a really significant financial setback to schools. So schools are, you know, very, very closely watching how that recovers, and if it ever does recover, because that can mean millions of dollars to some of these larger schools.
All right, that's Wall Street Journal reporter Doug Belkin. Doug, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks very much for having me.
And before we go, a quick programming note. We'll be off on Monday for the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, but we'll be back on Tuesday with a new episode of Your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.
C3 AI Enterprise AI software supercharges your SAP installation, making it fully predictive. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.